Well, good afternoon. Been a fantastic day so far, hasn't it? Planning committee, you know, you put together plans, and this far exceeded, I think, anything we imagined in terms of the music, the message, the inspiration, and I hope this afternoon continues to be something that inspires each of us. I have the sort of daunting task this afternoon of trying to tell you something about the history of this church. And we're going to try to do that with a lot of pictures and a lot of things that happened here. But I want to start by saying, again, why do we review the history of our church? The last thing we want to do is look around and say, well, look at all the great things we did, right? There's a danger when you start doing this that you can start to think, well, we did that and we did that and we did this other thing. But let's remember, God led this church. God blessed the members of this church with talents, with dedication. And I think we need to be very careful we give the glory to God for what has happened here. So I encourage you to keep that in the back of your mind. Now, the other thing we want to remember, there's been a theme for this whole day. I included the text from the little bookmarks. And if someone did not get a bookmark, was not here this morning, we still have some, so talk to me or someone else. We have some of the little souvenir bookmarks. One of the reasons we want a bookmark is because we want you to remember this text and associate it with our church. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. Amen. This is a review also. This is we could call this a quiz from this morning, but we talked several points in the service this morning, Sabbath school and the church service, about this famous statement that Ellen White made. And it's almost like this is such a classic statement when we talk about the history of our church, our denomination, and our own lives, that this has become a memorable statement. And I won't read it again here, but the important thing, the famous part of this, is we have nothing to fear for the future except as we shall forget the way the Lord has led us and his teaching in our past history. Ellen White was referring to her life and the ministry she had seen in her life. But we can think the same thing when we look at the ministry that's happened in this church in the last 100 years. Should we have any doubt that God is leading? And when God promises that he will take care of us, that he's going to return and redeem us, do we have any doubt that that's true? We look around us and we see the things he has done in our lives and in the lives of this congregation. We can be assured of that. So that's a punchline for this whole day. And I want you to remember that. Don't get lost in the details. The details are fun. They're interesting. But don't get lost in the details. We want to remember God has led. And he will continue to lead, and we can trust him. All right? We alluded in, I think, the church bulletin somewhere that Ellen White might have come to Midland. It turns out Ellen White was she did quite a good job of documenting her activities. And if you go to Testimonies for the Church, Volume 2, there's some interesting things. I copied these from that book. She had just described a dream that she had where she was cutting out pieces of fabric and giving it to individuals, and she was getting so tired of doing that. And an angel came and told her, basically, you don't know the good that you're doing cutting out these pieces of fabric. It was symbolic of her mission in her life to help people. And God was trying to teach her that you're not always going to know what your work does in someone else's life. Immediately after that dream, this is what she wrote. I at once decided to accompany my husband and brother Andrew, not her personal brother, but brother Andrew's, to Gratiot, Saginaw, and Tuscola counties. That's getting pretty close to home. And trust in the Lord to give me strength to labor. Now, this is 1968, right? I'm sorry. Well, we're off by 100 years. Sorry. It's even more impressive, all right? February 7 to May 20, so it's in the winter months, all right, when this happened. She decides to come to this area, and on the 7th of February, 1868, they left home, they rode 55 miles to our appointment at Elma, We know where that is, right? That's not too far away. At the Alma meeting, there were brethren present from St. Charles and Tittabawassee. Now, Tittabawassee was the old name for the town of Freeland. Okay? In Saginaw County, that's one of the evidences that is Freeland, who urged us to visit them. Of course, they're at these meetings in Alma. We had not designed to enter this county, the Saginaw County present, but to visit Tuscola County if the way opened. But they didn't hear from Tuscola, so they decided to visit Freeland. This is James and Ellen White. And she tells the story. I don't include all the details here, but she was happily disappointed. The language is a little funny there, but I mean, she was amazed to find a large house of worship recently built by our people, well filled with Sabbath keepers. And a great and good work had been done in this place through the labors of Brother A. I attended 11 meetings in this place, this is Freeland, in 1 week, spoke several times for 1 to 2 hours, and took part in the other meetings. Pretty amazing, huh? That's pretty close to home. And she talks about visiting St. Charles and some of our other churches in this area as well. And then the interesting thing, in my last vision, she's referring to this cutting out of fabric and giving it to people. She says, in my last vision, in that vision where the angel reassured me, I saw places where truth would be preached and bring out churches which we should visit. This was one of those places. Freeland. Okay? Pretty amazing. Now, that's pretty close to home, but what about Midland? Did anything happen in Midland? Well, we can play around a little bit here. If you look at the history, I can thank my dad for this, the kind of thing he liked to figure out. That was 1868, and they were meeting in Alma. They had to get to Freeland. How did they get there? Well, today you would probably go down M46. M46 did not exist at that point. The St. Louis Plank Road was not built until 1870, which means the only other way to get there was to follow Pine River Road, which would bring them to Midland and then on to Freeland. So a little bit of supposition here, but some pretty good, strong supposition that Ellen White and James White passed through Midland. And certainly strong evidence that they were heavily involved in ministry for a short time at both Freeland and in Alma, right in the heart of our area. So I thought that was really a neat piece of history. And we talked this morning about people. I think Brenda talked about, you know, people dedicating their life to something they didn't know what happened. Ellen White probably never knew what happened in this area because she doesn't appear to have come back here. But look at how God's work flourished in this part of Michigan. Something we can be very, very thankful for that God has led. So I wanted to share that tidbit with you. That's pre-church, pre-this congregation history. But the first evidence we have of Seventh-day Adventist activity here, 1868. Quite early in the history of our church. All right. Several people sort of set the stage. So I'll go through this quickly, but let's talk about what was going on, sort of set the stage. One of the big pieces of news as World War raged in Europe was a German U-boat sank the Lusitania. 1,200 people died. The U.S. was still 2 years from entering the war, but our president basically tried to get the Germans to promise they wouldn't do that again. And eventually we got dragged into the war. We tried valiantly to stay out of the war, even with something that drastic. Some of these other things were mentioned. This was neat. Alexander Graham Bell called Thomas Watson, New York to San Francisco, first cross-country phone call. Federal spending, all right, wasn't mentioned. $0.75 billion for the whole year. All right. I think we've exceeded that slightly since then. All right, but perhaps of more interest, what was going on in Midland in 1950? And you can go back on the internet. It's wonderful, the things that you can find. Here's a couple of pictures. This one on the left was 1910, a picture of Main Street. You can see not too many cars, a lot of horses and buggies tied along Main Street. I think this building is above the Oscars barn. I think that building still exists. And then over here in 1915, postcards. Postcards were favorite souvenirs at that point. The Midland Homecoming Celebration by Love's Photo Studio. They've got their little banner across here, but you can see, again, some horses, and this would be Main Street heading down toward the Dow Chemical Company. Looks a little different then than it does now. Population of Midland is about 4,000. We're about 10 times that size now. And for the Dow historians here, the Indigo Lab was established. And then two very famous labs came later, within a few years, the Organic Lab and the Physics Lab, which really became the cornerstone of Dow's new product development. So this was the early stages of Dow trying to figure out what it was really going to be in the chemical industry. Perhaps even of more interest is to ask what was happening in the Seventh-day Adventist Church in 1915. Our World Church membership then was 137,000. Now we are, what's the latest number at the General Conference? 18 million? 18.5, okay. We had 76 missionaries at that point, international missionaries. General Conference President A.G. Daniels. This is an interesting one here. There was, at this point, as World War I was starting to break out, the Adventist Church in Germany had a difference of opinion about carrying arms and being involved with the German military. There was a part of the Adventist Church that split off at that time in a disagreement. And just recently, a few months ago, there was a major reconciliation that we agreed that it was a mistake that we separated and we're trying to build that relationship. A very interesting, very current end of that story. Spicer Memorial College, certainly famous in Adventist mission stories, opened that year. And although not an Adventist, Fanny Crosby died in that year. And of course, it was already mentioned earlier today, this was Ellen White passed away in 1915. And two pictures here in later age, and this is from the Diamond Tabernacle. This is her casket for the funeral with two men standing beside the casket. A wealth of flowers and things. This was a big event. She died in California, but a funeral service was held in Diamond Tabernacle in Battle Creek. All right. Brenda did a nice job of giving a few little tidbits of some of the history here. I've got a couple things to add. Bay City and Edenville were active and reaching out with spiritual activities. Mr. and Mrs. William Wendover Sr. were baptized in 1884. He was a landowner west of Midland. And then 1905, we had two ministers, Hoxie and White. This is what, I don't know if our facts match exactly, but Brenda told the story. They came and had meetings in the Wendover Schoolhouse. A little bit of side history on that. Apparently the neighborhood kids didn't really appreciate these meetings. They were throwing rocks up on the roof, and some kids set off some shotguns and things like that. But in spite of that, the pastor still persisted and resulted in a number of new members. Those members didn't have a church. In fact, they rented the city library for Sabbath services because the library was closed on Saturday. So they actually had services in the city library, not the current library that we have, but there was a smaller, older building downtown. There, in 1911, there was a three-week evangelistic meetings. They had a revival tent, which was pitched pretty much in our downtown area, traditional evangelistic meetings. And with the increased number of members in 1914, construction started on a little tiny church, 24 by 45 feet. You could probably fit about two of those inside this room here, to give you a sense of the size, the whole building. Right? The Sunday when this church was organized, which the date was February 28, 1915, so it was earlier this year, 100 years ago. This is the official minutes of that business meeting. And the actual copy is in our little museum side room here if you want to look at that. And there's a photocopied version so you can go through that. But this is written in the handwriting of Elder Hicks. And this is what it says. Sunday, February 28, 1915, the Company of Believers in Midland assembled in their new church on Midland Avenue for the purpose of being organized into a body. Talks about the conference leadership from the Eastern Michigan Conference. there were two people from the conference and Elder Hicks, who I either was a Bible worker or a part-time pastor. I can't figure that out exactly what he was, but he was appeared to be employed partially by the conference, but he became the elder of the church as well. I suspect he was something like a Bible worker working in this area. They were present, and there were a few remarks were made by Elder Guthrie, and then Elder and Mrs. Hicks and Sister Ray Farnham, hence the bottom's cut off, were listed as the charter members, the three charter members. And perhaps this is the end of the minutes. In between, they had their nominating committee report and voted in the officers, which it said all were unanimously elected. It was noted that the church name should be the Midland Church of Seventh-day Adventists. Meeting adjourned. H.A. Tix, acting clerk. Interesting, that name is different than what we call ourselves today. We're the Midland Seventh-day Adventist Church. I don't know if we made a mistake or if we officially changed it, but the written record says we're officially the Midland Church of Seventh-day Adventists, just for what it's worth. But that's the original minutes of the meeting, which I thought was pretty neat. And there's minutes of succeeding meetings if you want to look at that book there, as well as the membership list and all. We have the original clerk's book. That was the church. For those of you familiar with Midland, you know where, I guess it's Indian Street comes, and you turn to the right, one-way street, you turn to the right and get onto Eastman. Right in the inside of that curve was where the church was. And you notice the minutes said they met in their new church on Midland Avenue. Eastman Avenue was originally Eastman Avenue. The county and the township were apparently fighting over the name of the street, so they changed it to Midland Avenue, and then eventually it got changed back to Eastman. But during the time when this church was built and first occupied, it was Midland Avenue. Artith, this is for you. Our children's story, if you weren't here for the church service, talked about this communion table, and that's the table, and those are the two offering plates. Okay? That's the way it looked in the old church. Some other interesting things, there is a fluorescent light here. Dick Shell said they might have donated that. That was pretty high tech in those days. There is a little bell, probably for stopping Sabbath school class, and there are two little buzzer buttons here, which I think buzzed the kids down in the basement to say that the adults were done. The kids better get up there for church. You also notice over on the wall here, this was the offering. Goal was $80, and they got $88.40. That was probably for the previous Sabbath. Interesting picture. There used to be, apparently, an old pot-bellied stove over in this corner that eventually was replaced with a coal-burning furnace down in the basement. On the other side, there was an upright piano. Some comments. These people are no longer living, but they left a little bit of legacy here. I'll just read a couple of these. Maudie Cowick, it was so small, you two could fit in the space of the present sanctuary. LeVon Dice said, getting to the bathroom, even after the outhouse was eliminated, meant a trip outside because for a time the base was only excavated under one end of the building. You can read the rest of them. Ruth Nash says, the friendliness of the church members who used to gather to visit with her and her husband Clyde Windover on Sabbath evening. No formal invitation was needed. Everyone just came and brought something for a potluck meal together. Sounds like they had a good time. Well, the church family outgrew the building. And this is a picture of the demolition with some very modern equipment tearing the church down. At this point, we had moved into this building. So I wanted to give you a little history of this building. This is a picture from the Midland Daily News, actually. Groundbreaking in the winter. It looks like they're mostly breaking snow, not ground. I don't see too much soil being turned here. Key people here, Rodney Stark, the general contractor. Here's my father, Harold Maul. This is Alden Dow on the right, the architect. Elder Wartsock was the secretary treasurer, and David Parkhurst was our pastor at that point. Midland Daily News photograph on the groundbreaking of this church. Snow breaking. Charles MacDonald, Mac gave me a set of pictures that are just fantastic. He apparently went out on the corner out here and took pictures as the building was built. I didn't include all of them, but you can get a little slow motion view of the building as it was built. This was the lot with just a little bit of excavation done. I think this house is still there, as well as that house. The main beams are going up. Redwood siding, actually. We ended up painting over that at some point, but you can still see the redwood. Extraordinary cost today. You would never even be able to buy that wood. And you notice no activity center, right? Picture of the inside. No organ at this point. We had flowers up here, and a lot of things unchanged, though. This was the exterior shortly after construction, without the activity center. Looks quite different. Dick Shell and I were commenting that it's actually quite attractive, this end of the building with the stone chimney and the way the entrances were, all the sidewalks and the shrubbery. It was quite attractive. Fortunately, we bought enough land to be able to add on the activity center out in this region out here. Service of dedication. Dedication is only done when the bills are paid. Okay, so we did take out a loan, but after all, everything was paid off. We had a dedication service, December 17, 1966. You can see some names here. Mrs. Harold Maul, the organ prelude, Elder Ola Robinson, conference people. We had a quartet. My father actually gave a short church history presentation. We had an active dedication by the pastor. Conference president, Elder Moon, had the dedication prayer, some music, and Reed Tate burned the mortgage. All right. That was a high day. It's a picture of my father, I think, probably on that day of dedication. Not sure, but I think, given the flowers, everything there, I think that's there. And my dad, who liked history, wrote a little piece called Miracles Do Happen. I'd like to read an excerpt from that. He did not share this for quite some time. I don't know where. I assume he read this at some point. But it's a story about building this church. And it talks about buying the lot, and there was a little bit of pressure to do it. They went to the conference, and the conference people came, and we bought it quite hastily, turns out. And that's where this story starts. Its title is Miracles Do Happen. Sometime later, after the purchase of the property, a building committee was appointed. Their first job was to get the deed for the land contract from the conference office and apply for a building permit from the city. It then, for the first time, was found out that the city of Midland had condemned three of the lots. These were the three lots on the south side along Carroll Street over here. They had been condemned because of certain sewer pipe elevation problems. Consumers Power Company owned a 30-foot right-of-way east and west in the center of the six lots. This was a high-voltage line that supplied the newly developing area. There were three power poles and transformers already installed. It was also learned that the Midland, Michigan Pipeline Corporation owned the right-of-way 60 foot wide and south of the road, right of the way along Ashman Street. There were two pipelines installed. One had been abandoned, and the other was actively carrying crude oil from Oil City to the Bay City boat loading docks. Do you see a problem here? There was no way a church could be built on the six lots that had been purchased by the Michigan Conference. Now the story turns positive. The building committee, armed with a preliminary sketch of the proposed church and a site plan, contacted Consumers Power Corporation in Jackson through the local office. They agreed to move the poles, reroute the power lines if a church was going to be built on the six lots. After several weeks, one day, a couple Consumers Power Company trucks pulled into the area and removed the set of three large transformers, rerouted the high-voltage power lines, and the three very tall poles. Sylvester can probably give us some idea of how much that costs. Not cheap. About the same time, the city of Midland, after several meetings and a verbal promise from both the building committee and the architects that nothing would be built along the south three lots that required sewer connection, they agreed to issue a building permit. A few weeks later, Michigan Pipeline Corporation notified the building committee in writing that the right-of-way would be released to the church in about 3 years. In the meantime, construction could be done. The pipes would remain in the ground but would no longer be used by them. The church was built. God surely used his Holy Spirit to influence the two corporations and the city of Midland to allow us to build on the site in an excellent location where our church now stands. And then there's a punchline to the story. One day, discussions between the building committee and Mr. Alden B. Dow, the architect, the old church building was discussed. Mr. Dow asked how much the church wanted for the lot and building. Previously, the church and business session had voted to try to sell the property for about $5,000. The men answered, "I think $5,000. Mr. Dow said, "I will give you that sum in cash." And here's the question. Don't you think that God led in the location and the building of the Midland Seventh-day Adventist Church? That story probably is not real well known. And you could argue, well, maybe we were hasty and made some mistakes, but regardless, God solved the problem. I think it's a fantastic story. Activity Center. We're in the 1987 time frame. A couple pictures here laying the foundation and then the trusses going in. Wonderful facility. You enjoyed it today as you had lunch. Many, many uses for it. It's been a real blessing to our church. Very beautiful building, a very beautiful room. And then you look at this sanctuary. It's easy to be biased, I think, when you live here and you sort of like the way it looks and you grew up here. You know, saying, well, it really looks nice. I like the way it looks. I'd like to share just a brief story. A couple years ago, I came in. We were getting ready to start a Vesper program. We had the lights on in here, similar to what they are in this picture. And there was a young intern, summer intern pastor from Saginaw. I didn't know him at the time, but I saw a young man standing in the back, in the back row, just sort of gazing at the church, the interior of the sanctuary. So I went up, introduced myself, said, "You know, nice to have you here." And before we even started the conversation, he says, "You know, this is the most beautiful sanctuary I have ever seen." And I said, "Well, what's your background?" He said he came from Europe. He'd seen Adventist churches in Europe. He was intern pastored in various places, intern in the U.S., and his comment was he was basically stunned. He was just standing there just absorbing the beauty. Now, buildings are not, that's not our mission in life, to make buildings that look pretty, right? But it is a blessing to be able to represent God and his work with a building that looks nice. Okay, some other church events. First community services building. We had community services going for quite some time before this. Dorcas, that was the old name. This came from our church newsletter. This was a photo of the dedication of that first center. Right, Lucille Thomas, Ola Robinson. I'm sorry, this is Lucille here. Yeah, we don't know who the other people are. You see the newsletter is actually saying, "Can you help us identify the other people?" But I thought that was a neat picture. We've got the mayor, Julius Blasey, there with the big scissors opening the center. And you heard today from the councilman the blessing that center has been to our community. You'll hear more about this later, okay? I just have just this one picture. I wanted to put this in the timeline here. You're going to hear about the school later, too, but this is a neat picture from the Midland Daily News, 1956, just after the construction of our first school, which is now on the airport property. So this school, this was an article in Midland Daily News saying that it was going to be open for classes that fall. And a nice picture of the outside. More pictures in the museum area. And, of course, the current building. The airport decided to expand. We got a nice sum of money for them buying our property and school, and providentially, God provided a vacant school building, as I understand, that was very, very nice, that we could move into and without requiring a lot of additional fundraising. Donna's going to say more about the school, fantastic history associated with that. So this is just sort of to put it in the timeline of important things with our school. Should point out this school is shared by multiple churches, not just Midland. Right? Bay City, Saginaw, and St. Charles have all been or currently are involved in helping run our school, wonderful school. Newsletter. As far as I can tell, this is the first issue of the newsletter. I could be wrong on that, but 1983, Susan Smith was the editor at that point. And a little excerpt from that, scripture cake recipe from the first issue. You look up these Bible texts, so you're using 3.5 cups of Exodus 29:2, whatever that is. You do a little bit of Bible study as you bake this cake. There's a piece of history there. Newsletter eventually changed. We called it the Friendship Flyer for some time. This is an important piece of news. We talked about Pastor Tarsi Lee. This was when he was actually ordained, which was a high day. And then I had to stick this in. This is, we ran a series of cartoons. I didn't warn Reed that this was going to be in here. He probably forgot or doesn't even remember this. But Reed, and we love you, you are volunteering for everything, and these guys are trying to reserve some sort of church job for somebody else. So Reed volunteers again. They're trying to hold his arms down. I thought that was pretty funny. But Reed and Ardith, we really appreciate. You both have been a backbone of this church for many years. And this is a little humorous, but there is a real message here. In our current newsletter, Pastor Herthel is the editor, and Marissa has been doing design. We've graduated to color and changed the name again, but still doing the same service of telling us what's happening in our church family. There are past issues that go back quite a ways. I went through these. It's so much fun to read pictures of people, church activities. It's one of the few ways we have of archiving the history of our congregation. Okay, that's primarily the history of the buildings and stuff, right? But that's not really what a church is, right? The building, you have to have a building to represent your organization and to function, and you want it to look nice, and you need a school, and you need a community services center. But what is a church? It's the people. So for the rest of what I share with you, we're going to talk about people. That's what really makes a congregation, God working through individuals. What I've done is prepared some general categories. It's not chronological, but just to give us sort of a remembrance of the breadth of things that this congregation has done for the Lord. Different kinds of things. And this first category is not a fun category. I called it grieving together. It's an important function of churches when something sad happens. Church family shares the sadness. We hold each other up. And there's an event that I'm going to show you which I think is symbolic. Happens again and again when we lose a member or something tragic happens, that we help each other. We strengthen each other. If you go back in history, we have the story of Emory Crane. Emory Crane was, if you look back at the minutes of our secretary's report, he was a Sabbath school superintendent here in the old church. He was drafted in World War II, and he went in as a medic. So he was a non-combatant, went in as a medic to try to help injured soldiers. And in our records, actually from the newsletter, we have a letter that he sent back to our congregation. It's a very significant letter, and you'll see what that means. Let me read some excerpts from this letter. Again, I think this is symbolic of trials that church members go through where we support each other. This is a letter that was written from somewhere in the Hertzgen Forest, November 17, 1944. 5:30 p.m. I'm not reading the whole letter, but just excerpt. 5:30 p.m., all is quiet. Yes, too quiet to bode any good. We know what will come before morning. Then it comes. I have been through plenty of shellings before, but not heavy stuff like this. The very earth seems to tremble beneath you. You just lie there and pray. Hour after hour it goes on. All the next day it goes on, and the next. Will it ever stop? Your head hurts. Every muscle in your body aches from the tension. Still it goes on. Shells are bursting all around you. Will the next one hit your hole? The cry of the wounded is more than you can bear, but you must remain where you are. Then it is quiet again, the kind of quietness that hurts. I grab my medical kit and jump out of my foxhole. I yell for the other medics and buddies to give me a hand. After many hours, which seem like years, we are through. Those who are alive are on their way to rest and quiet. Never have I seen people so godless as they are right now. After all, that they have suffered during the past 5 years, they still deny the power of God. Not until every man, woman, and child realizes that they need God will this war be over. Prayer can do much to end this horrible mess over here. Yes, we are big enough to gain the peace of the world, but are we big enough to hold that peace once we have gained it? Very prophetic. Without God, there is no peace. I only hope and pray that peace may soon come, that the work of God may soon be finished in all the earth, that we who are faithful may soon go home with him where there shall be no more wars. I must close now. May God bless you and give you good health is my prayer. Write when you can. Say hello to all the brethren there at the church. May we soon meet again. Love, Emery. Unfortunately, before this letter arrived, we received word, this church received word that he had been killed in the Battle of the Bulge. His name is on the memorial down by where the old courthouse stood as one of the fatalities from this city. You can imagine what that news was like when it came to this small congregation, that little white church, and his wife. A very sad time. And my dad writes in his comments here, I think here, the war memorial near the courthouse on Midland's Main Street lists the name of Emery Crane. We believe his name is also written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So I bring this as an example. Bad things happen, but congregations help each other. It's one of the most important things that we do. All right. On a little lighter topic, how many enjoyed the meal today? You know, church, we provided just some basic veggie hot dogs, and I went in there, looked at all the food that was there. It was just amazing. Thank all the people that contributed food. That was a tremendous spread of food. And so I put a whole category in here of eating together, something that's important for churches to do. Look at that spread of food. And that's not unusual in this church. Fun times. Times that build family. The ministry of potlucks is wonderful. Okay, the Colburns. All right, I hope I'm not blocking views here. John Paul and Debbie Navarro. I have to apologize. I had to put this picture in here. This is my parents, and they love potlucks, all right? And I don't know if you would call this a four-course meal. Sharon, I used to tell my dad that, you know, there's other people coming through line, and why don't you just take a small amount? And he would always say, well, I don't want to offend anybody by not taking something that they brought. They enjoyed potlucks, as I think we all do. It's an important part of church ministry. Having fun together. And again, the same category, a church that plays together and enjoys each other's company is a strong, healthy church. And I just found a variety of pictures here. This was a Valentine's banquet where we had a photo booth, and Dick and Lois had quite a pose. Of course, we had a housewarming recently for the Sorios, and that was a special event too. This is cut off at the bottom. This is actually, I think, 1966. This is a church social, and it looks like they're mummifying the husbands. This is Millie, I think. Millie's here today. This probably was Lloyd inside of that thing. This is Lucille, probably Harley Thomas inside this one, and that's probably Dick Shell. And I think this is Reed. I suspect that's Ardeth there. So. Good times. Talent program 1994. Pastor Colburn, his son, and Kevin, and Jeff, and Christy. Okay. All right. Weldon and Pauline, again, enjoying some good food. I love this picture. Lucille Reed in the background there. I think this is 1994. Tarsi Lee received his citizenship while he was a pastor here. And this was up at Campus Saba. Some people baked a flag cake for him. You can't see it. To celebrate his citizenship. He's pretty happy. Ken Dice and Wilbur here. That was 1991. Celebrating a pastor's citizenship. Fish Point. Numerous trips to Fish Point. We haven't done as many recently, but the geese and swan would migrate there, and pretty much an annual event for a number of years going over and seeing them in the spring when they migrated through. Here's MDOT trash pickup on I-75. All right. Okay, these need some explanation. This is Jeff Coates behind the shades. And this, I believe, is a temporary tattoo. This was a 1950s diner social. And, all right, fun time. And then on the right, we have Don Ervick and Joyce. You notice something unusual. Don is eating with a knife. We had a menu that included the utensils as well with various obscure names. And Don obviously hadn't ordered his fork in the first course. Church campouts. I love this picture of Bud. Ken Dice and my father, I think, getting the same corn that Bud's eating here. Dice campouts, perhaps a little more known. We, for a number of years, Dice has invited us people to their place on M20 for a weekend campout. And the McDonald's continued that tradition for a number of years. He's making some sort of pancakes, I guess, for breakfast. This picture's not real good, but you can see Jeanette Alford, Ruth Hodges, Gladys Yetman, Amber Russell, and Joyce Ervick. I threw this in. Bud thought he was pretty good at chopping wood, and my dad challenged him to a contest. I don't know who won, but it was quite a fierce competition. Nature Hike, 1978. This goes back a ways. I don't know how many people you recognize. I think this is Chris and Wilbur over here. Wilbur's hiding behind the edge of the picture. Yvonne Dice, there's my mother, Grethel Mall. Bud Thomas, Ruth Ella, and Eula. I think that's Pauline, and that's Weldon. And the others are various kids of those families. Fun times. District retreats, been a huge tradition in our district, coming up next Sabbath, by the way. Jake Elmer looks a little younger. He was our guest speaker that weekend. And Jim Snelling. Jim Snelling did a series of nature devotional talks and actually somehow got a frog to croak into the microphone. It's quite spectacular sound. Okay, ministering to young people. getting a little more serious here, what this church has been very devoted to young people. And I just wanted to share some things with you. Anna's baby dedication, I love this picture. Pastor was praying, I think, in Spanish. Bless his soul, trying to do that for the family. Very special. That's why he's got an electronic device here so he can remember the words. But it was a special dedication. See if you can recognize any of these kids. This is Jeff Horn. That's Ryan Schell, I think. That's Eric and Andrew, and this is Christy, I think. That's my wife, Sharon. I'll put this up to remember the effort that we put into our children's divisions. You know, we talked this morning about creating memories, good memories for kids. We do that. It's an important part. It's sort of off in the fringes, so we don't all see it happening, but it's very important. Children's story, Pastor Bentley. He's got his eyes closed and his mouth opens. There's something important that he's saying. Parties for our kids. So we're at the Horns. This goes back a ways. Debbie Navarro. I don't remember her name. I think this is Janelle Sears. Matt. Alicia. John Trask. Abilene, yeah, thanks. Kendra Bovey, yeah. Is this Paul? Okay. All right. I don't know what's happening. Abilene has something on her mind. I think they just done a little skit or something. It was VBS. Years and years of that. I just put more recent pictures of this. Very important ministry of our church. This was a youth lock-in all-night party in the activity center, which was harder on the adults than the kids. This goes back 1958. I put a couple Pathfinder slides, and we're going to hear about Pathfinders in a few minutes. Who's this guy? That's Reed. And who about this? That's Ardith. Ken Blosser, Chet Moore. I think that's Bob Reed. I don't know the other people. All right, in uniform, again, we have Reed and Ardith and Chet here. Pathfinder Fair Time. Oshkosh Camporee. Brave group of young people that went to the 2009 Camporee. I think we have had Pathfinder clubs at every single Camporee. Is that right, Reed? We have not missed a single Camporee, going way back. Pastor Greenfield, baptism. This is Josh. That's Michael? Okay, thanks for helping. In their pond at their house. They had a potluck and a baptism in their backyard at their pond. It was a special, special day. Blessings of music. I put a separate category in here, too. We've had wonderful music in this church, all different kinds. Organ was installed, dedicated, October 24, 1992. Dorothy playing here. You know, you can see that, but I included a few pictures here. That led to all sorts of music programs. This was a Thanksgiving hymn festival. We had a guest organist conductor, John Ferguson, come in and actually lead a choral hymn festival. We had people from the community come in and sing with us. One of many events. And we've had other kinds of concerts, Scott Michael Bennett and Matt and Josie Minicus more recently. Okay, perhaps the most important category, spreading the good news. I mean, all these other things strengthen the church family. And you want to have a church that when people come to this church, they want to be part of that family. But you also have to reach out to people. And so I've gathered a few slides to show, just remind us, the kinds of things that we've done. We talked about pastors this morning, and the red ones' names here are pastors that are still living. We heard a little bit, well, some of them are here with us today, and the ones that are not here, we had a photos and some comments, and there are letters in the foyer from them if you want to read the complete letters. First, 1915, H.H. Hicks, we mentioned him as being the clerk and the elder of the church. You'll notice there's a number of years here with no pastor. My father kept a diligent list of all the pastors and elders and Seb school superintendents going way, way, way back. I think there was a period of 12 years when he was the elder and probably spoke almost every Sabbath. During that time, a pastor had as many as 17 churches. So although their name is here, that doesn't mean that they spent much time in Midland. These little churches were sort of self-sufficient. All right, Sabbath school classes, wonderful, wonderful, right? Just one example. Very important part of our ministry. Hell seminars. Our very own Daniel Gooden speaking here just a few months ago on dementia. Cooking and health eating classes, living free classes. Dorothy talking here, good group in the activity center. Included an example of preaching, which is certainly an outreach. Anyone that walks in these doors should hear a spiritual message, and they do. Included a picture of Pastor Stevenson here. This is a neat picture. Pastor Colburn, a baby dedication for Kevin and Dee Horn, their three kids, Christy, Jeff, and Katie, age 4, 5, and 1. All right? Yes. Fantastic. Okay. Wonderful man. Could sing. Okay, 89. Body family. We just had them here a couple weeks ago. This church adopted them. One of several churches adopted them, the Dendi Project in Benin, West Africa. We've been strong financial supporters and I think moral supporters as well, giving them encouragement. A big part of our church life, sponsoring a missionary family. Baptisms. Love this picture, David Ignatowski. No longer with us, but that was a special day. Willing to stay at them all. Done that for a number of years as well, reaching out to our community. These were the famous vegetarian meatballs. Maybe not a huge church effort, but still part of our church family. A Cuba mission trip, Pastor Wolcott and Mariana and Nathan. I'm sure they could fill us in on some neat stories from that trip, but this was before now when going to Cuba was not really a legal activity. New church sign. We've gone through several iterations on this. Russell Pank and Daryl Jurians, when we first started that particular sign. Got a number of seminar series. This was Archaeology of the Bible by William Shea. Agape Feast. These build good memories. Wonderful memories. Very spiritual memories. Prayer booth. And by the way, if you haven't signed up, I think there's a couple of blanks. Prayer starts tomorrow. Our commitment to regular evangelistic meetings. And this is highlighted by a sign, your Revelation Hope Seminar out on M20. And our evangelist supreme. Pastor Herthel loves evangelism, and I like this picture. He is so intent on some important point. I wish I knew what it was. I love this picture. Youth pastors and Bible workers. Some of you may not remember this. We have a long-standing tradition of bringing young people in for the summer. Boaz and Ray Papendick, you remember? This is Keith Kerbs. Pat Murphy, this is taken actually on a backpacking trip out in the Manitou Islands. Ken Scribner, I didn't have a picture of Ken. And Russell Murningham, most recently. And maybe I left out some names, but we have a long tradition of having people come in to be both youth pastors and Bible workers. I love this picture here, including some baptism pictures, because that's critical, right? Those are important steps. I love this one, Kevin Horn's Baptism by Tarsley Lee, 1991. This is D, I think. Is that right? I've had the privilege of teaching a class with a pastor and Kevin. Such a blessing to our church. And it goes back to events that change people's lives. Strong Tower Radio. Okay. I love this picture. When you're the leader of trying to put together a major ministry and you can sit and watch people be baptized. All right. These two pictures are a pair, and a lovely pair. And I think I'd like to tell one more story here about how God has led this church. I think some of you remember there were a number of years where we were trying to get our own radio station. There was a frequency that became available. We filed petitions for the FCC to get that frequency. It was a high-power FM station. Another Christian radio, so-called Christian radio station, bid on that as well, and we even argued back and forth with the FCC with some lawyer briefs and things. We lost that. We invested several thousand dollars. We lost that bid. We did not get that frequency. And I looked at that. We didn't have any idea what God had in store for this church. If we would have taken that on ourselves and tried to run just the power alone for a high-power radio station, and all the meetings we have spent trying to decide what was going to be on that station and everything else, and just a couple years later, Strong Tower Radio just falls out of the sky as a blessing, right? God has something far better than what we were, in our feeble humanity, were trying to put together. He knew we needed a radio station, but he closed the doors for what we were trying to do. And we ended up with something that's better. In our church, certainly we support Strong Tower Radio financially. We had a marvelous Christmas, old-fashioned Christmas radio program here. Strong partnership. God had just a marvelous plan in place. 3ABN. There's a story behind this. I won't tell the story, but this, Dan, Chase, and I have been a little bit involved. This is actually about 2 miles east of our church. This is the tower. This is the transmitter, and here inside this little shed is where our signal goes out from. Here's a little equipment rack. 3BN goes through this little shed out to people in this community. So I come back, full circle back to this statement again. Has God led this church? Absolutely. And we keep repeating this statement, but I think it's the punchline for today, and so we need to keep reminding ourselves. Look at all these ways, I'm sure I missed many, all these ways God has blessed the ministry of this church. Why should we ever doubt that He will continue to bless it? And I think most importantly, in conclusion, I love this picture. Why should we doubt that He's coming back for us? Nathan Green painting of the Second Coming. It's a marvelous painting, and I borrowed it here just to remind us this is the goal. Right. Thanks for your attention, and invite the quartet to come up and have some more music.